Company of One, episode number 17. Hello, this is Dale Callahan, and I am your host of Company of One. I am here just to share with you some thoughts today. This is mid-July, and we're going to talk through how not to be defined by the system. Now, that sounds like a negative title, I'm sure, but it sounds that way to me, too. But it's just something interesting, and there's two or three different ways I'm approaching this today. As I'm sitting here, it's a July day, and I'm sitting in the car, which is generally not a good idea, but sitting in the car and using my iPhone. I got this from Ray Edwards, was talking about doing podcasting and recording stuff on the voice memos on an iPhone. And I just thought, well, that's just too easy. That's, you know, the iPhone's in my pocket all the time. So I thought I had to try it. And I'm doing the most inconvenient possible place to do a podcast, sitting in outside of the parking lot at a Walmart, ready to go in there to purchase something, to give Walmart some of my hard-earned money. And this is the worst possible way to do a podcast. And I'm doing this for a reason, partly because I really like Ray, and I thought it was kind of crazy and thought, well, I'm going to have to try his idea. So on the second thing is, I find that we are so often defined by the system. Let me tell you what I mean first. And by the way, that's why the podcast has something to do with this. My normal mode of podcasting is in a studio with the microphone set up and the computer set up perfectly. And if you've been listening to this, you know that I've done a few that are on the road, was almost apologetic for them. So I'm not really going to apologize for this one. This one's going to be, this is a test. This is to prove a point that we can do anything anywhere in so many ways today. We have so much at our fingertips. And yet, we are letting ourselves be defined by the system. And what I mean by that is, we go to college, we go to school, we get kids, we send them to school, we have a K-12 mentality. And I know this, if you know much about me, if you've been listening to this, you know that we're homeschoolers and we have a company that provides to homeschoolers. So we're a little bit outside of that domain already. But then we tend to go to college and we think about college in a certain way, a four-year activity, maybe four-plus-year activity. Then we think about careers and we think about that a certain way. You fill out a resume, you get a job, you go to work for the man or the woman, and you just plow away and hopefully you get promoted. You're usually in pay grades, you know, depending on the corporation you're working for, you're in some kind of pay grade system. You hire in as a position one, and you try to get promoted to position two. Or if you're a bank, you may be a teller, and you're trying to become senior teller, or you're trying to become bank vice president, manager, whatever the case. We got these predefined packages in mind that we're trying to fit our little life into, these crazy packages and things that just can't be done. So I just want to share a couple of stories that have just come barreling forward at me the past couple of days or past couple of weeks of how often I notice this is done differently and how freeing when it is done differently. So let me just tell you the first one. I became a gentleman contacted me the other day, and he's starting a company. A typical phone call I get, let's meet, let me talk through it. Untypical thing about him is he was wanting my technical expertise, which, don't tell him I don't really have any anymore, but actually I did tell him that, but I told him I was a recovering techie. But he intrigued me because, unlike most people I meet with, it became very clear in the phone conversation that he understood what he was doing, he knew the market well, he didn't have the technology worked out. So I referred him to a guy by the name of Josh Jackson. He was a PhD student of mine, so now we're going to call him Dr. Josh Jackson. He's a brilliant guy, fun guy, but he's not your typical PhD by any stretch of the imagination. when Josh and I worked together on a team, when he was a student at the university and I was still doing research, and I had a project where I had to deliver some research, and it was for the Department of Transportation, and we were going to try to track the position of a vehicle over a very small position, over a bridge. They were doing testing of bridges. You know, you've seen bridges vibrate and some of them fall down recently in the news. They were testing to make sure that kind of thing doesn't happen. This wasn't anything new. They do this all the time. They just don't always catch it. So that part of it, they wanted to be able to track the position of the truck on the bridge as the truck was moving over the bridge at 60 miles per hour. And I needed somebody on my team that could pull it off. Josh is a guy that I'd met. I taught a class, and Josh was in there, and he seemed like one of these go-to guys. And so I talked him into come joining my team. Actually, he left another faculty member's team to come to my team. I basically asked him how much he was being paid, and I said, well, I'll pay more. That's that kind of, you know, sometimes things are just that simple. I said, you know, I want somebody on my team that can get it done, that we're not fooling around with academia here. We need product. So Josh did. He came and he joined the team, and we talked about things. And what essentially the crazy idea we came up with is, let's make the truck into a computer mouse. Now, if you're sitting at a computer right now, and you're probably not, because that's not how we usually consume a podcast, but when you get home, if you have an optical mouse, you know, the mouse doesn't have a cord on it, it's got a little light, LED light or something on the bottom of it. Look at the bottom of it. That mouse is a camera. And what's happening is, you move the mouse around the desktop or the mouse pad, it's taking photographs. It's a high-speed camera. It's probably, if you have a fairly modern mouse, it's probably taking 6,000 pictures per second. That's a pretty high-speed camera. Now, obviously, they get higher speed, but for a $14, $20 item, that's a pretty high-speed camera. Now, obviously, it's low resolution. This is not pictures we're sending to grandma, but it's a very high-speed camera that's taking pictures and then correlating position and then sending that position back to the computer screen. And, you know, fairly simple concept. And as these guys were talking about the truck, I thought, well, that's the problem. GPS was not nearly accurate enough to measure the position of a truck down to the inch. If you know anything about GPS, it's not nearly accurate enough. We could do laser range finders and everything, but you can imagine sitting on a bridge, putting a laser range finder in the road in front of a truck moving 60 miles per hour. You better be ready to move it. So there was, and plus the equipment got expensive. So we came up with a simple idea. We'll take a optical mouse, we'll mount it to the truck, we'll let it capture position on the road surface, and wirelessly send the data over to the van that the Department of Transportation uses to collect data. And while they're doing this, all the important stuff was measuring the vibrations on the bridge. And they had all these crazy gauges, you know, that to measure strain and vibration and all the other stuff that you care about, because they're looking for faults on the bridge. So when we came up with the idea of building this, and it became a relatively complex problem, because if anybody that does camera work, you know that, you know, the camera on the mouse is mounted, is right down face at the same distance from the surface all the time. It's on the surface. So it has a fixed distance. But you know, as you take a camera and you step forward or step back, the image gets larger or smaller because of the size of the angle of the lens and all these kind of things. Mathematically, it gets kind of complicated. So, you know, when we realize in the truck, you know, in an ideal situation, the truck is going to be moving at a perfect height, but the truck bounces. So the position of the truck varies. What we found out is we needed to take the mouse chip, we needed to put a lens on it, then we need to find the distance it was from the road, and then we need to correlate that distance in. As you can tell, the problem started to get a little bit more complex. But I remember so specifically, there were some guys on our research team that had done a really super smart guys. I mean, brainiacs. People that just hurt your head to be around because they could talk in so many complex terms. And they were telling us one day that, hey guys, this won't work. Mathematically, this is impossible. And they had, these two gentlemen had great credibility because they had built missile tracking systems for the military. They knew how to track stuff. And that's essentially what we were doing. We were tracking. And, you know, and they were showing me mathematically why this would not work. And I remember so specifically that Josh went home that night and built a prototype. Built it overnight and brought it back. And a couple of these guys were scratching their head trying to figure out why it did work. And again, super brainiac people, and they figured it out. They kind of began to understand, hey, you know, they had an assumption wrong. Like we always do, right? We assume things wrong. Just because they're super smart didn't mean they didn't miss something like the rest of the world. But, I remember they were trying to explain to me why it did work, and I remember the math. And they think I'm some kind of genius because, you know, they were acting like I understood their math, and I was like just shaking my head. Of course I do. No, I didn't really want to. I was like, look, dudes, I've seen it track. I don't really need you to correlate this mathematically for me. I get it. But it was just so amazing as we sat there, because I was kind of down and out when these guys saying, hey, it won't work, because, you know, here's some idea we spent a little bit of, here's an idea we've spent some time and energy on, and now the people that know better were telling me it wouldn't work. Josh didn't listen to that. He just went home and built it. How often do we just do that? We just assume people know what they're talking about. Even when they do know what they're talking about, we assume they understand all the parameters. He just went home and did it. He just went and built it. And it got complicated. It got nasty. And we kept building it. We kept solving the problems as we went. And we did. We were able to accomplish that. So here's a... That's just one of the people. Josh was not letting himself be defined by the system. He was going ahead, and he was, in fact, doing it anyway. I love that. I love Josh. You know, Josh is the guy I always want working for me because he just does. And this is, by the way, this is what this guy does for a living now. He makes stuff happen for a company. And they just go off and they make it happen. They buy parts, they build it, they solve problems. Hey, that's what engineers do. Let me give you another example. And this one just happened today. And this is a schooling issue. And anybody that's familiar with Chris Guillebeau, and I'm probably butchering his name, but he wrote the book, The Art of Nonconformity. It's a really great read. I think it's something that you should poke around at, The Art of Nonconformity. I love the title. He talks about getting his education in there, but I'm going to just, it's related to Marissa. I get this call from this gal, Marissa. And she's at in the call. This is a very bubbly girl. She's very outgoing, very excited. And she's telling me, hey, I'm trying to get some Calculus 3 material. And I'm trying to get my Calculus 3 set up and figure out what syllabus to use. And I'm at this college. And by the way, if the word calculus kind of makes you break out in dry heaves or something, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. And yes, I'm talking about the third calculus, in which case we're doing three-dimensional calculus, is among other things. And she's, but I didn't really understand what she was getting at, because I was thinking, wait a minute, you're at a university, you need calculus three. And to give you the background, our homeschool company, one of the things we sell a product on Calculus 1, where we teach Calculus 1 at the homeschool level, or really at the college level for homeschoolers. She had taken that. And then what she was telling me was she had taken our course, but she realized, well, I need a Calculus 2 course now. And so she went and signed up at a local community college, took Calculus 2. By the way, not very many community colleges teach math at this level, so that was a little unusual. But she took Calculus 2, and she said, I went to class the first day of Calculus 2. Now, this is a girl that's been homeschooled. I went to class the first day of Calculus and the second day, and I started realizing class was a huge waste of time. Because I'd go to class, and I was so far ahead of the teacher that I was bored, and I realized nobody else in the class had even read what we were covering today. So the teacher was slowing down, and I was already ahead, so I just thought, this is a big waste of my time. Now think about that. Think about that. I mean, seriously, one of the positions I'm always stating is that universities don't own education. This girl was getting an education. She was just doing it at home. She was using the book. She was preparing the material. And so she went to the class. What the university was providing, the faculty, wasn't really educating her. He was actually slowing her down. So he told her, he said, look, obviously you can learn this stuff yourself. Just show up and take the test. And you got credit. So that's what she did. She went home, studied it, showed up, took the test, made an A. Big surprise, right? Well, she's telling me all this, and she's telling me it's, hey, I'm doing Calculus 3 now with the university, and I'm trying to figure out what syllabus to use. I'm in this book by Stewart, and I'm using, and I'm like, what do you need a syllabus for if you're already taking the course? The university's defined the course. They've defined the material. They've defined the book. What do you mean? And she said, well, what the faculty member told me is, he said, we're not really teaching Calculus 3 right now. We won't do that for another year. So it's not in the schedule. So he said, but I'll give you, if you just go home and learn it and come back, I'll give you the test, and you sign up and get credit. She said, that's what I'm doing. And I kind of started to clue in here. I said, how old are you, Marissa? She said, I'm 16. Now, I don't know how many of you understand, those of you that are engineers get it, and the computer scientists get it and everything, but at 16, she typically, what would be a sophomore, junior in high school, and so she would be typically doing algebra, geometry, or possibly pre-calculus. So here she is. She's three courses in. This is the last calculus course the typical engineer takes. So she's doing it at home, and she was making it very clear to me, I've got a couple of weeks, and I'm going to knock out Calculus 3. Now, just literally, I'm going to knock out Calculus 3 in a couple of weeks. Now, you don't care about all these details. I understand that. You do care. You care a lot about her thinking. Her thinking was, I need to do something. I'm just going to go do it. She's not being defined by the university system. She's not waiting for the university system to give her an education. She's going out and getting it. She's paying the bill to them, and they're giving her credit. That's what the university really does, is they give you credit. They don't educate you. Okay, universities are for giving you credit and credibility. They are not for educating you. Because, quite frankly, if you go to a university, it's pretty much up to you to do the education. That's just the way it is. They can provide you with wonderful resources at times, and sometimes they're not so wonderful, but it's up to you. She's doing it. And then she made the comment to me, she's going to try to go to a very highly known, very expensive university. I won't give away too many details. I don't have her permission. But she said, I want to get done with this calculus course because I need to start a business because it's going to cost me about $40,000 a year to go finish my college, and I need to start a business to pay for that because I don't want to be in debt. I love this girl. I was like, can you please come to work for me, like, now? Because it's not that she's brilliant. I'm sure she is brilliant. It's not that she is some kind of brainiac in the sense, it's that she just is not letting something else define her. She's doing it. She's making it happen. That is just absolutely, that is what's wrong with our crazy country today. We have so systematized every single thing that we're not operating as individuals anymore. We're operating as little cog in the wheels, and we like it that way. How fun is it really? how much more fun. This girl was having a blast doing calculus. Josh had a blast doing stuff and just making stuff work. Recently, I'm working with a whole lot of entrepreneurs. I mean, I always am, but to recently, even more so, working with people who used to make good 80, and I won't even give any examples here. Well, I will. I'll give you Podcast Answer Man. And you can go to podcastanswerman.com and you can learn all about Cliff. His story is great. And I think Cliff was telling us in a conference he was making a good $80,000 a year. He was, you know, here's a guy making $80,000 a year as an insurance salesman, doing great work, you know, making a good, strong living. And he quit to do something that's fun. He defined his own system. Now, I don't know, you know, Cliff has documents on his website showing what he's learning, but let me just give you the clear picture. He is in the 1% that our president and Congress talk about all the time. He is no longer defined by anything but what he's defining. And he's creating stuff. He's having a blast. If you know this guy and if you've been around him for any period of time, or listen to him speak or listen to his podcast, you know, the guy's just having a blast. He's not being defined by the system. And he's just one of hundreds of people like this I know now that are going out, doing stuff, adding value to people. Now, I'm telling you about these three people, about Cliff Ravenscraft, about Marissa, the homeschool 16-year-old girl, about Dr. Josh Jackson, and I could tell you others, but you get the point. I could tell you about sitting in a Walmart parking lot recording a podcast just because it can be done this way. You know, what's holding you back? What's holding me back from accomplishing something? You know, why can't we just define what it is we want and go do it? What are we waiting for? We're waiting for the system. We're waiting for permission. So today, I give you permission. Go conquer something. Go kill something. Go make it happen.